Hi, I'm Mary.
And I'm Martha, and this is Kicks and Giggles. Woohoo! We're gonna start off by talking about the US versus Germany.
Oh my God, Martha. What was the score? Go ahead. Tell us. I'm making you do this because your husband is a German fan. I know he's a US fan in women's soccer, but like, come on.
The score was 4-1. I was even happy to see Lynn Williams get that last goal.
Oh,
Yes.
I literally texted you what it was like the 81st minute, 82nd minute, and was like, well, now I feel fine.
I
The
know.
first three didn't do it, but that one did.
And my husband was like, so now she feels fine? I was like, yes. It's Germany. It just seals the deal, of course.
It is not impossible, as we saw, frankly, with Australia, Zambia, to come back.
Yeah, and we'll talk about that later,
We
but yeah,
will.
hey, you never know.
Yeah, I kept watching the clock. And like at the 75th minute, I was like, we're up 3-1. Do I feel good? And I was like, no. And at the 80th minute, I was like, we're up 3-1. Do I feel good? And I was like, no. And then at 80, whatever, we were up 4-1. I was like, okay, now I feel good.
Exactly. That starting squad was great, especially the three up front. They were killing it. And I just love to see the speed with how they would take the ball away. Those German defenders, they had to foul just because they just couldn't keep up.
I
So I
know.
was excited about that.
Agreed.
What about you?
Oh man. Yeah, that front three was incredible. That first goal from Soph Smith, I legitimately thought all three touched it. Trinity Rodman goes running up the side, looks to see both Mal Swanson and Soph Smith, Sophia Smith on the near and far cross, and ended up kicking it out to Sophia. I saw on, I think, Tobin Heath's podcast, she said that was like the most unselfish run Mal Swanson's ever done because she drew her defender fully to her, making herself seem like a threat, knowing that it was not going to come to her, knowing it was going to go to Soph. I, on the other hand, thought that Mal got a foot on it and swore up and down through the entire game. Like, no, it was all three of them. Trin kicked it to Mal. Mal sent it off at a slightly different angle, straight to Soph. And my dad's like, no. I'm like, yes, it's what happened. It was not what happened. I know, especially Americans love scoring. And I, though I am an American, love the game more. So I usually care more about the midfield and defenders, but there's something about the I saw goalie Trinity.
Someone was advocating for Triforce, but that's the nerd in me.
I understand why you like that one. It's funny because I don't usually like puns, so I don't know why I like goalie Trinity so much, but I do. I really do. Anyway, they are just incredible. And I think they really like each other, which, forwards don't always get along because I was a defender. So I'm like, if we win, that's all that matters. And forwards are like, oh, I must score. And I think I know this actually because of Lynn Williams, because she talked about it like, as a forward, all you care about is like that next goal, which that's great. That's what's motivating. But I love that they love each other.
Yes, they do. And I have to say that the one that shows you just never give up is second goal, first Swanson goal. You just don't give up. You don't give up.
That goal was insane, and watching her run behind the goal because she like ran it in was so cool. Also, another thing I got wrong was that I would have sworn that Rose Lavelle scored that third one when it was clearly Soph Smith. She was the first one the camera panned to, and then they showed the replay. I'm like, oh, no, it was Soph. Let's just say stress makes me very scatterbrained. And I was so stressed about that game yesterday. I texted you on Saturday about already getting nauseous about the game the next day. So I was extremely scatterbrained, at least for the first half. Question for you, again, even with a 4-1 win over Germany, I heard some people being like, oh, we didn't score that much in the second half. So what do you think? Do you think that like that's going to be an issue, or do you think, like me, that they were just like, we don't need to exert ourselves. It's the second game of the Olympics. We'll sit on this and the subs will come in and it'll be fine.
I think for this game, well, first, Germany were grouped.
Yeah.
They're not nothing.
No.
And they were trying to make some moves in that second half. What I kept on noticing is they were really pinching or squeezing Horan. And
Yeah.
because there's a couple of times that Horan like didn't quite get the ball to the next player or lost it, but I also think they were putting the squeeze there. They were putting the squeeze on the midfield, which they knew that that was an issue. So tactically, that was a good move for Germany.
Definitely.
I was a little bit worried about that. And I think they were also really getting to Crystal Dunn. Like they were really squeezing her and attacking on that side.
Yes. And what
So,
was that about? I was also like, leave Crystal alone.
I know. I was worried about her. I was like, please do not injure her. Do not injure her. That's what I noticed in that game in general. So I think that Germany tried to hold it down as much as they, as much as they could. And I think they were targeting those two players. I think they were trying to do that to Trinity, but Trinity's so fast that it was difficult to keep up with her, and they had to foul her when they could.
I loved that. Trinity as playmaker. Again, I'm sure she wants to be out there scoring, but like she is, to your point, so fast that they could not almost. That's almost what I said about Lindsay. I was like, Lindsay's not as fast as Trin, so maybe they could put the squeeze on Lindsay because she was her their pace. Which
But
isn't,
I
and I
mean,
don't mean that in a mean way. I just mean Trinity Rodman's fast.
yeah, many of the Germans probably have played against Horan more frequently, so they know her style better. I don't know.
No, you're definitely right because Lindsay Horan plays in France, rather than the United States, and a lot of the Germans play actually in Germany for the women's Bundesliga. Some of them play, I think, in like the women's Super League, but in England. But definitely, and I think that she does have like a more European style. So even if they haven't played her directly in like Champions League, they are familiar with what she's doing. So yeah, I think that's definitely right.
Yeah.
One more thing on Trinity Rodman though. So I watched the game with the vast majority of my family. Sadly, not my sister who and her family who live in California, although I do love them and they were watching the game. But I was with my nieces, who I'm going to refer to as Bubs, and well, as well as my nephew and my brother, my sister-in-law, my parents, as well as my very good friends, and my soccer friend here in the city who we watched all the Euros and Copa together. Anyway. I loved watching my nieces, Bubs, both of them, watch the game. It really made my heart sing, like at the end of The Grinch. My heart expanded three sizes, especially, actually, no, not even especially, but the reason I'm bringing it up now is because the littler one really loved Trinity's hair. And so she was sort of off to the side watching on the big screen by herself. And all of a sudden, I hear from that corner of the room, pink, pink, pink. Because she was just cheering for Trinity. And it made my life. I mean, I sat next to my other niece who was like, yeah, you gotta stop freaking out. It was very funny for me. Anyway, so the one other thing I think we should talk about from that game is my AB fave, Tierna Davidson, Martha. I am terrified that she is injured.
I really hope not. Tierna was doing a great job defending. She was going at it like a lot of plays were stopped by Tierna. And when I saw that hit, it looked like it hit the side of her knee. But later on, they said that it was a lower leg injury or something happening, which was great. Well, it's not great, but
No, I know what you mean, but
knees.
say more. Say for people who don't understand what you mean, say more.
And knees are not to be messed with. Knees have a lot of ligaments that help support that upper leg and help connect. And if you tear those ligaments, that is, it's definitely a season-ending injury, tournament-ending injury. So you don't want that. If it's something with your muscle, you could recover a little bit more. You might need some time off, but you can recover. With ligaments, it's if they break, it's definitely surgery time. Recovery is difficult because ligaments don't have blood flow directly to them. So
Yes, those are all the things I was going to say
this
exactly.
is my physiology, my biology background coming
We
out.
got to blood flow and I'm like, I'm learning. I'm learning. No, I was really relieved when I saw that lower leg report, and everyone agreed, everyone online, which is who I listen to apparently, says that it's strategic to not give us an update until the day before the game with the required press conference because our opponents also will then know who they're playing against. And like, to some extent, if you can keep them in the dark as long as you can, like the fans just have to deal with it. So I thought that was fair, but I love her and she's already torn her ACL once and she's so stoic to see the tears in her eyes as she was walking off the field. Like my eyes teared up and I was like, you've got this.
I do hope she's okay.
Yeah, me too. Well, we'll see. Next game is Wednesday against Australia. Sort of on the same topic as knees-ish, or at least explanations of knees, why they matter so much. We thought we'd give a couple of phrases that have stuck out to me as words that people definitely understand, but may not understand in the context of soccer, football. And I wanted us to just go through them really quickly. Obviously, if you guys have other ones, you can send us a note at the at our email that we'll talk about later. But these are the ones that stuck out to me. So Martha, do you want to get us started?
Yes. So a couple of times we've mentioned set pieces. And set pieces are when in a soccer match, the ball is not in play yet. It's stopped for a variety of reasons, but it is about to return into play. So, for example, when the ball goes out to the side and there's a throw in. That is a set piece. And that's something that players can practice because it's gonna happen in the game. So they practice, hey, we're gonna have throw-ins. How are we going to handle this? Same thing with corner kicks. And that is when you are a player is kicking into or at least towards the goal. From the two outer corners, the left or the right corner. And it's the opponent's goal. So corner kicks are set pieces. Penalty kicks are also set pieces. And that's when the opponent versus the defending goalie one-on-one. Oh, what else? Goal kicks are set pieces. That's when the goalie actually kicks towards their player, towards the opposite side of the field. Free kicks, that's when you have a kick from anywhere within the field. That's not a penalty, not a corner. Usually free kicks are given if there's a foul and they have to stop play. And so where the foul occurred, that's where the free kick is taken from. So those are set pieces.
Amazing. Something that actually has a lot to do with set pieces is VAR or video assisted refereeing. There are several refs on the field. You may have noticed when watching soccer, there's one on the field running up and down, two on the sidelines with flags that oftentimes are looked to, for example, to call offsides or if the ref can't, obviously the ref can't see everything at any given time. And they those two lines people play a big role there. There's a fourth official who is the one who you see calling for substitutes when they hold up the big board and the substitutes numbers are on there or and not or at the end of the first half and second half and then if they go into overtime those halves as well they tell you how much extra time there is. VAR is the reason that you see really long extra time at the end of games and tournament play. I think in the regular season, refs are sort of more like accurate to the actual or maybe even under allow for extra time just because they do have to follow certain rules. There's like I think it's 40 seconds if there's a goal scorer, you have to add on to the game. But in tournament play, obviously they want everyone to have as many chances as they can. And when something goes to VAR, it takes minutes. So when you see like a plus 15 minute, which we saw in the first round of men's games, or like a plus 6 minute, which I believe was the end of yesterday's US game, sometimes that comes from a VAR decision. Now, what it is, which I have not actually said, is there is another official in a booth somewhere watching the game and able to like rewind back, slow down, and communicate with the referees on the field about what actually happened. If, for example, the ref had a bad angle or their back was turned, or those are probably the most likely situations. So a lot of set pieces and fouls generally are often subject to VAR review, especially penalty kicks. So for example, if you go down in the if a player on the offensive side goes down in the box and they're like rolling around, which we'll talk about, doesn't happen as much in the women's game, but they're rolling around and they're like, ugh! The ref is like, oh, I didn't see it. Like, what was supposed to have happened? That VAR official can like pipe in and say, I've watched it twice. It's definitely a foul, which means a penalty kick. On the other side of things, when there's a red card or a yellow card, we talked in our last episode about the red card that I still am very mad about in Zambia. That was after a VAR review where the VAR official actually called the main ref over to the TV screen accessible at the field. The ref picks a little box with their hands to indicate that they're going to go look at the TV screen, runs over to the side, watches it themselves, and then makes the call. So, yeah, VAR is relatively new in the modern game. Certainly didn't exist when Martha and I played. And I think they're still sort of figuring out how it affects everyone. But yeah, if there's like a sudden, really long pause and then the ref makes a little boxy motion with their hands, VAR.
You know, it's until now that I am laughing at that because at the motion. So, with the two index fingers, they make the outline of a TV or a screen that is VAR. It's hilarious. I was like, they have all these hands signs, which maybe we'll get to, but the VAR one is hilarious.
Agreed.
Another thing that you've probably heard us talk about is how many times a person scored a goal. And sometimes you'll hear it on TV when they say, oh, that person had a brace. That means that they've scored two goals in that game. And a hat trick, of course, is if they score three.
Exactly. So Mal Swanson had a brace in the first US game. And Barbara Banda, who we talked about when we were going up against Zambia, had her third hat trick in an Olympic game yesterday against Australia. So something that obviously are words people understand, but people use it a lot in soccer is the far corner. So when you're playing soccer as a kid, when you're watching soccer as an adult, when you're watching soccer as a kid, playing soccer adult, whatever, people who are trying to score are trying to aim for the far corner. So imagine you're running down a soccer field from the midfield, you're going towards the goal that you are trying to score in, and you're on the left side. Maybe you're a left foot genius, I don't know, but that's what you're running in. So you're running in on the left, and what if you and the goalie are looking at each other and you're going to take a shot, what you want to do is place the goal as close to the corner on the far side, which on this case would be the right side of the goal. So in the back of the net, all the way on the right side. The reason for this is, look, goalies are often tall. Obviously, they can stretch across a goal, but no one's going to be able to, like, even the best goalies in the world. And I honestly, you saw it a little bit with Alyssa yesterday with the one German goal. I would agree
Correct,
that.
yes.
I would argue a little bit that she was out of position and could have saved it under a different day, but like people were in front of her and whatever. But it is not impossible, but it is extremely hard for a goalie who is looking at you coming down the left flank or whatever on the opposite side to stretch their entire body to the other side of the goal in time once you've kicked it to block a goal. And if you can put it up in the air in that far left corner or far corner, like that is definitely incredible. Like it's not impossible to solve. Obviously, it happens, but whoo, that's what people are talking about when they're
Yes.
like, that hit the far corner.
That hit the far corner. And you have to be good and precise because there are other times where the player tries for the far corner and goes completely out. So that's the
Yes.
dangerous part. You have to be accurate or else it's gonna go out.
Or like even more heartbreaking, because I think that even when you're accurate, so often that far corner hits the top bar, hits the side
Yes.
post, and then you've wasted your opportunity. If you had just like maybe you would have if you'd chipped it up over the goalie or something, like there were lots of other options. So yeah, it's a risky move, but it's the desired move, I would say.
Yes. And one way in which people can get a penalty is by diving.
Boo.
I just, but not really. So, diving is seen in soccer when a player is going, with the ball. Usually it's a forward. And maybe they get a touch by the opponent. Maybe they don't even get a touch. Maybe the grass got in their way. And all of a sudden, they fling themselves forward as if they are diving forward on the pitch, pitch meaning the field. It's a definition within a definition. And then they usually have a face like, what? I don't even know if that's the right sound to make. But it's an
I liked it.
astonishment or in pain because someone has fouled them. Again, it could be the opponent fouling them, but I have also seen all of a sudden the grass, the dirt came out of nowhere, imaginary dirt.
The wind, a bad thought from, yes.
And so they dive forward with an astonished look. Or a pained look.
I feel like if they roll three times or more, it's a guaranteed dive. If you are in pain, you are not propelling your body forward even further.
No. So during the Copa America, I saw this cartoon where they actually dived the cartoon player and then rolled three times into the penalty box, and then they scream penalty.
Oh my gosh, though, Martha, you're right. We didn't talk. The penalty box is the mandatory. Maybe you did talk about it, but that's what makes the difference between a regular free kick and a penalty kick is that it happens in that box. Not the tight
Yes.
little box near the goal, but the 18-yard line box.
Box.
That's a very
And
funny
so,
cartoon.
yes. Yeah, so if there's a foul that occurs within the penalty box, it might get reviewed by VAR on whether it is a foul, which
Or a
will then,
dive.
or a dive, right? So dives are sometimes if you're a great actor or actress, they might be rewarded with a penalty.
Yeah. Or the nice thing is also that if you are caught diving, you will be assessed a card and sometimes I just always think of Rivaldo, the Brazilian player Rivaldo. He was assigned, I'm trying to like place when Rivaldo was in the Ronaldinho era of Brazilian soccer. Anyway, he was assessed an $8,000 fine because diving is crappy. I think we all agree.
Yes.
In Martha's incredible example of a penalty kick wherein someone is either fouled or dove in the penalty box and it goes to VAR. While that's getting reviewed, or anytime someone gets injured and is on the ground for longer than a short period of time, the ref's going to call out the medical professionals. And again, it's significantly less recent than VAR, but certainly didn't happen until at least the 2000s. Suddenly, the medical staff all had this shaky bottle of what looks like hairspray. You're not hairspray, like dry shampoo. That comes out white and they like spray it aggressively on wherever the player is clutching. Again, You can hear the derision in my voice, perhaps, because I think the spray is ridiculous. And so people who watch a lot of soccer, like, they'll come out and they'll see them shaking the bottle and they're like, ah, the magic spray. I see. Now, honestly, I've never looked it up. I'm not going to look it up now because it's not going to change my opinion. I'm assuming it's some kind of numbing agent that, like, you know, you have like a quick knock and they're just like, okay, well, we'll get you through the rest of this game and then actually see if you got hurt or if it just hurts right now. But it is hilarious. Someone goes down, especially in a dive, clutching their knee as though it's been chopped off. And then this, like, they're not short, but they're shorter than the players. Like, medical professionals come like jogging out with their bag, pull out the spray, 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 spray. And then the person jumps up, magically healed, and they go on with the game. And it is, to me, hilarious. That's it for today. Again, if you have other words that we're saying that don't make a ton of sense, we'll try and catch it. Martha, that was a great catch with pitch. And maybe we'll do this again later. But, you know, just send us a note and say, why do you keep saying this random word? It doesn't mean what you think it means.
We have an update on Canada. Remember Canada and the drones? The committee assessed Canada. Would you call it a fine? It feels like a fine, but they gave them -6 points. To recap, every game you win, you get 3 points. So far, Canada has won 2 games, so they would have had 6 points. But because they are now fined -6 points, they are at 0 points, even though they won their 2 games.
Yeah, it's a real heartbreak, Martha, especially because, look, we'll see what comes out. I could eat my words, but the Canadian women, at least, you know, I think of Christine Sinclair. I guess you can't have more than one goat, but if you could, she would be my other goat of women's soccer. I was like, no, we had no idea this was going on. And it hurts the players and the fans rather than the people who actually were the cheaters. Obviously, we talked last time about Bev Priestman going home, the coach. But like, if you're going to, I just feel like the deduction hurts the players and they're not, maybe they will come out with sanctions that will hurt the coaches or the coaching staff. And like, you could see some of them being barred from international soccer, either for several years or forever. But I don't know. It breaks my heart a teeny tiny bit for Canada, because if it's true that the players had no idea this was going on, all this does is hurt them.
I think I'm a little bit harsher in the sense that, yes, it does. I mean, it does hurt the players, but if the coaching staff had any information, the way that they were coached, the way that they were trained, they got some benefit out of that.
Without a doubt. Absolutely. Anyway, so that's Canada. They still have a chance. We'll talk about it. One other thing that I read when I was reading up about the Canada scandal is actually, and I like remember this happening a couple months ago, but completely forgot it had. The New Zealand coach, whose name I'm going to say, and I really hope I don't say it incorrectly, Klimkova, stepped aside for their last several matches before coming to France, like their friendlies, because of, I believe they're calling it a workplace issue. No one's, at least no one I could find, has indicated what that could be. Like, could it be? I mean, in a way that I feel about Canada, where I'm like, you're supposed to be nice. I do feel like New Zealand is supposed to be, in my head, it's like this wonderful country of nice people. And so maybe it's something like bullying or like overly harsh feedback, or maybe it's something far more sinister. We honestly don't know. There was talk that she might come back in time for the Olympics. She hasn't. And she is like, I'm going to say defiant, although I haven't watched any videos, so who knows if it's defiant, but sure, why not? Is saying that she's going to come back after this, again, workplace issue is resolved. So I don't know, but if we're talking about the Zambia coach who is allowed there, we should talk about how New Zealand pulled that coach in advance and said, not this time.
Yeah. You know, I thought she had stepped out herself.
Yeah. So she took herself out of the friendlies. And then I think everyone sort of agreed that she wouldn't, like, she took herself out of the friendlies saying that they would try to resolve the investigation. But I believe you are 1000% right that she's the one who originally said she was going to not recuse herself, but you know, like take a leave of absence during those games. But
Yes.
then I believe everyone agreed it would be best if she didn't distract the team in the Olympics while the investigation continues. So.
Well, the other thing that we want to talk about in general is the weather. It's been hot. So when it gets to 89.6 degrees or like 89, 90 degrees Fahrenheit, typically there is a hydration or water break. So this usually happens 30 minutes into play, as well as 75 minutes into play, depending on, the weather. This temperature measurement is taken when it's like in direct sunlight. So it isn't the shade temperature, it's a direct sunlight temperature. And they usually have 3 minutes to take a water break. If it is below that, usually that doesn't happen. People take water breaks anyway if someone is injured, so they take advantage of that. But when it gets to a certain heat, then they can take those water breaks, and usually the ref calls it out.
Yesterday, I was watching Colombia beat New Zealand in Lyon, and the field was split right down the middle, from a shady side to a sunny side. And it made me think of Martha, the friendly match that the US played against Mexico before going to the Olympics, where it was 90 plus degrees anyway, and then the field was split again, just in, like a perpendicular line to the field from goal to goal, essentially. I'm not sure I used perpendicular correctly there. Anyway, the point is, during that game, you and I were texting, and I was like, is it just me or are the players staying old, like desperate to stay on the shady side of the field? And it was funny because I looked up the temperature in Lyon to see, because you had told me that very cool tidbit, and it was like 86 degrees. And I was like, oh, interesting. They didn't have the same sort of hugging the shady side of the field. But every single time someone went down, everyone ran to the sideline for water. So it was definitely self-made water breaks, hydration breaks. Something else that I noticed, by the way, Martha, during that Colombia game, and I noticed it last Thursday in Japan versus Brazil, is that the PFAC subtitles are not good. I don't know. I started getting really mad at them because they kept saying he instead of she when it was like a commentator was saying something like, so and so did this, and then she, and it would always say he. I really am intrigued as to like what algorithm the closed captions are tested on, like men's voices versus women. And these were both men during that game. But like men's voices versus women's voices, and he versus she for sports. So that's like a whole other conspiratorial thing I've got going on. But yesterday during the Columbia game, without fail, every time, and they talked about Linda Caicedo a lot. The way it was spelled was Linda Koki Saito. So Linda, spelled correctly, Koki space Saito. And I was just like, how is it being so consistent and so wrong? Like, if he couldn't understand it, there's something where I get it, right? Like, oh, it doesn't understand. I mean, that's stupid. Again, there should be some training here, but fine. But why was it Koki Saito every single time? I didn't. Who is Koki? Who is Saito? I wanted to call it out.
I wonder how those captions work when it's a English speaker trying to pronounce a Spanish name, an English speaker trying to pronounce like any other, it could be an Italian name, it could be a Portuguese name, right? I think if you see closed captioning in Spanish, they would have got that.
Of course. Also, but you've made me laugh even harder because the guy who was commenting, first of all, got it right every time. I will say, British guy saying Caicedo, I was like impressed. But Restrepo on Colombia as well, who scored for them, he kept saying it with this weird Italian accent. So like British, Restrepo. I'm like, do you know who you're? It's Colombia. It's not Italy. Like, I understand that probably this man will also commentate in English for like Serie A matches. But it was like the first time I giggled, the 16th time, I was like, Someone has to tell him. This is it's not Restrepo. I couldn't get over it. So thank you for saying that and giving me the opportunity to truly, this man was very good commentator. No idea who he is, but that made me laugh a lot. Martha, I paused you from talking about diving at the end of your diving definition because I want us to have a full-on conversation. So, can you start to say the thing you started to say before?
We notice that diving is more common, or seems to be more common, in men's soccer compared to women's soccer. I mean, I've seen diving in women's soccer, but not to the degree of acting, of rolling three times, of holding your knee as if you're correct, it's been chopped off. And then popping straight up, like, oh, yeah, that was nothing.
I had a friend come with me to a Red Bulls game on a Saturday night and then a Gotham game on a Sunday afternoon a couple weekends ago, who it does not watch soccer. And she said, unprovoked during the Gotham game, "Man, this is way more fun because they're not rolling all over the field the whole time." And I was like, "Yes, exactly." I will, there's a from this season. There's a video of Sydney Leroux on Angel City, the Los Angeles women's team, getting like a full line drive into her head. She goes down like fully legitimately and pops right back up mad. And I'm like, see, this is in a men's game. We'd have 15 minutes of whining and everyone being like, let's change our strategy on the sideline. What happens? However, I watched Spain, Nigeria yesterday. And like clips from, I haven't seen anything about the France game yesterday, but clips from their previous game. And I do think that the French and Spanish players are starting to dive more. And that makes me sad, although not surprised, because obviously the Europeans are more accustomed to diving. But I do get in like a unfair way, I get madder when women dive now than men, because I'm like, this is what makes the game great. Get up.
Yes, I agree. And the thing about diving that just also gets to me is just the amount of time wasting that happens. Tactically, people waste time. I understand that, but if it's like 0-0 and you're diving, come on, you're just making the game longer for your peers.
Right. And especially in a tournament like this, like it's rude because then you're going to add that 15 minutes on at the end. And like, no one needed that. It's hot. They have a game in 3 days. Like, come on.
Yes. Now when I watch the French and the Spanish, I'm gonna take a look at that.
Speaking of the French and the Spanish and everybody. So I noticed that I, droned on during last episode's recap. So we're going to have a tighter recap today. I'm saying this to myself. Clearly, Martha is not the problem here. It is 1000% me. I did not watch all these games. Martha, I know you did not watch all of these games. The only two teams that I have not yet seen play are Canada and France. So we'll see. I'll try and it's just that France keeps playing at the same time as the US. And so in the 5 p.m. games, Colombia beat New Zealand 2-0. I watched that game and I have to tell you that 2-0 belies what happened in the game. Colombia destroyed New Zealand. I feel bad saying it, but it was almost, I was like, yeah, why aren't you scoring more? Japan beat Brazil 2-1, and it sounds like that would have been the more exciting game to watch.
I saw the highlights on that one.
So what was that like?
So the first one, yes, Japan missed that penalty. And it wasn't a miss, like the goalie got it, blocked
Oh,
it,
that makes more
caught it.
sense. Yeah.
No, it wasn't just a miss, it's like the goalie got it. It didn't have enough power on it, really, but
Still a penalty kick. That's impressive for the goalie.
still a penalty kick. The equalizer for Japan also came at a penalty.
Oh,
And that one got scored.
that's good. I do think people get superstitious when they miss penalties, so I'm glad they had a chance in the same game to sort of clear that one up.
And then there was the second one was just a kind of a goal in.
The one thing I know about that goal is that it was in the 96th minute, which,
Yes.
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 Is a bit of a heartbreak for Brazil because you're going in thinking, oh, well, we got a point. And then at the very last minute, it's like, oh, we got zero.
In the 7 p.m. time slot, Spain beat Nigeria 1-0, which, hey, Nigeria held them back. That's
For like
great.
80 minutes. Like,
Yeah.
I watched that. I texted you a lot during it. I was so impressed with Nigeria. I switched my obsessing about from German Heights to Paths Forward, which we'll talk about a little bit at the end. But I'm really, really heartbroken. It's not that they don't have a path forward. It's just I would say, an unlikely path. But you know what? This is the Olympics. Anything can happen. But I just think they've earned it. Like, between their play in the Brazil game and then especially yesterday. Ugh, I just think they should be moving. They should get a chance to get to the knockout round.
And the second game in that time slot was Australia. And Australia beat Zambia 6-5. That is a high goal scoring game. I had to watch the highlights because I could not believe. So in halftime, Zambia was up 4-2.
Whoa,
4-2,
4-2.
right? And this is the game where Barbara Banda had that hat trick. But
And Kounde Nadji hit a
okay.
brace, I think, right? Like,
Yes.
yeah.
So Zambia up 4-2. It's looking great. All of a sudden, that second half, it just broke down. Oh, I felt that Zambian goalkeeper was done. There was a goal. The soccer ball went to her hands and she couldn't hold it. It's almost if it went right through her hands. It was
No.
painful to see because look, if I was a goalie, that would have been me. It was such a rookie move, but I felt so much pain because she caught it and just not well enough, and it went back. And there was another goal that happened. It was an own goal too. It
Oh, that
was
hurts.
those last goals that Australia did. It wasn't really Australia who, I mean, I'm glad they got it, but there were so many mistakes on that
Yeah.
Zambian defense that it was fairly easy for Australia. Like, at
Yeah.
least two of those goals. Oh, I felt bad for Zambia.
Yeah. I mean, I feel bad for them too, but also get rid of your coach and maybe they'll have a better defense coaching next time.
Yes, yeah, that's true. But Australia, they never backed down and they just kept on going. I think when they got their subs in, I think they just got some energy and got those six goals. It was an exciting game. If you want to watch the highlights, you'll see lots of goals.
I, as I said before, am not one of those Americans who needs to watch goals, but I do think that that would be an entertaining watch, so I might do it. That's literally all I kept thinking while watching the score tick up, because every so often in the Spain Japan game, they'd like pop up the screen and screen, and just to show the score, and I was like, man, this is what Americans should be watching to get them into soccer, because Americans love some points. We already talked about the U.S. beating Germany, but I'm just going to say it one more time: the U.S. beat Germany 4-1. Did everyone hear that? Beat Germany 4-1. And at the same time, Canada beat France 2-1 too, as Martha told us before, get themselves out of that deduction created hole. So they are at zero. One thing that's really interesting is that at this point, only two teams have guaranteed themselves a spot in the quarterfinals. And those two teams are Spain and the United States. Every other of the 12 teams, so the other 10 teams, can still qualify in the top, one of the top two spots in their group. It's harder for the New Zealands, but like every single one. And then if you think about it, so the way that we talked about it a bit at the very front end, so there are 12 teams right now, and eight of them are going on. So the top two teams in each group plus two of the three third place teams. So literally it's anyone's game between the combination of like those third place teams moving on and it just being like a, you know, Canada beating France is like throws that group wide open to some extent. Yeah, we'll see. Anyone can move on. The US and Spain are already doing so. So we'll see what happens. Now that I'm far less stressed because I do know that the US is moving on. What would be your strategy going into this game? Are you going to do the rest of the starters or something? What are you doing if you were Emma Hayes?
All right. Oof. My first, so I honestly thought that she would probably rest the starters. But the thing is that Australia did come back. And so I don't know if she quite wants to rest the starters. I think she might, what might happen is the starters might come off earlier. So, depending on how the game goes, the starters might come off earlier and not play, like they might only play the first half, for example. Or if she wants to, maybe she'll put like the B squad up. But if, I mean, they're all great, but well, not all. But
All
she,
technically talented.
yes. But I think she, if she does rest them initially, I think she'll probably just put them in if we're down. But if the team can hold and it's a tie, then she might not.
Yeah, if we get a tie, we go ahead top of our group. And I think tactically that's the right you like just because you don't need to win this game or tie this game to go because they're guaranteed a spot. It is going to be better for the US for any team to be out in the first place position because they're going to play either one of the third place teams or a second place team. So you still want that tie at a minimum. I think you're right, Martha. I also think sort of with Australia coming back, they did probably overexert themselves. And I don't want to, you know, wish that upon them, but they played very intense soccer for 90 minutes. And the US did very technical soccer. But I do wonder if Australia will be more tired coming into this game. On the other side, they need it more, right? They don't need to win to move on. It sort of does depend on what's going on in the other game. Which is why the games on Wednesday will be each group will play at the exact same time. So I will finally be able to watch France play because they will not be playing at the same time as the United States. They will be playing at the same time as everyone else in their group. Because so much of moving ahead does depend on what's going on in those other games. So we'll see. From a strategic question, I don't know what I would do, but I bet we see a mix. I bet, you know, maybe Soph Smith doesn't play at all because of that knock she took to her ankle in game one. Trinity Rodman's like just 22 and therefore in my mind can do no, like she can play the entire game from here. Like she's got nonstop energy. So maybe she plays the whole game. We'll see about Tierna. Like if Emily Sonnet has to come in to start at that position for the at least next couple of games, then I could see a situation which Emma throws, you know, Crystal, hopefully, Horan gets some time off because that girl sees too many minutes. Hopefully, Rose gets some time off. But maybe, you know, I don't think you bring necessarily like Lynn back. But maybe you switch up the way you've been playing rather than a 4-4-2. No, excuse me. Yeah, she has not been playing a 4-4-2. She's playing 4-3-3. Like maybe she goes to a 4-4-2. Maybe she just, you know, maybe she throws Trinity up at the top and plays like, you know, 4-5-1. I don't know. I am not the US soccer coach. Which is a shame because I don't think I'd be good at it, but I do think I'd have fun.
Mary, you were going to ask me a question about the 99 squad. But first, I'd like you to tell me why the 99 squad is so important. Well, I think so important in US women's soccer lore.
Okay, first of all, this is not a subjective thing. This is objective. You think because you are correct. The 1999 team is extremely important in US soccer lore, in the history of US soccer. I suspect, I know it's the first Women's World Cup I watched. Is it the first Women's World Cup you watched?
It is.
Yeah. I like watch them. That team, most of the 99ers also played in the 96 Atlanta Olympics. 99 was here in the United States, and they did like a march across the country. So they started in New Jersey at Giant Stadium. That's right. Giant Stadium is in New Jersey, and ended at the Rose Bowl in California for the final in front of a sold out crowd, which in 1999, the Rose Bowl being completely sold out for a women's sport and soccer in the United States.
Yes, it was amazing. So I did some watching and I just saw a shot of the Rose Bowl for that game. And it gave me chills seeing how packed it was. It's a huge venue
Yeah, like 90
for,
something thousand, right?
yes, for this game. It warmed my heart, but also gave me chills because in 1999, that was unusual, unheard of. I was, again, chills when I think about it, even now.
Even now, we talked about the crowds last time. I think. I don't know. We don't have to talk a lot of this, but I was very pleased to see the crowd at the US game yesterday. I thought that was a
Yes, I was too.
same at the Spain game, just for what it's worth, that they definitely filled that stadium. So, but no, I think, you know, again, I cannot overstate the importance of that team in their the reason, and now I'm just going to go on a tangent, which because of course I was going to, but you know, there's a lot of theories about why the US women dominate in soccer. You know, they've got four World Cups, four gold medals, I think, in the Olympics, have always medaled in the Olympics, have never gone out before the, you know, the lowest they've gotten is a bronze. And I think, and that's just crazy, right? If you think about it, it's not like the Women's World Cup started in 1930, whatever, and there's three other teams that have the same stats. Like it's just not the case. And the each theory about why that is, our athleticism, you know, whatever, starts with Title IX, right? Title IX was passed in 72. If I'm wrong, I'll look it up later. And it said that you had to have equal rights to sports for men and women, boys and girls in high schools. And so that 99 squad is definitely the first one to have benefited from Title IX. If you think about people who were born in 1972, they would be hitting or have already hit and are in their prime. You know, what is, if they were born in 72, they were 27 in 99. And that's like soccer playing prime for women. And so, yeah, it was like that first time. There were World Cups prior to that, but I think 99, the combination of like that Title IX generation being in prime age and it being in the United States, just like set us up for success forever. And ever. And it's why we had women's leagues that were successful before traditional soccer powerhouses. Anyway, yeah, that's the also, I love them all. I think they all understood what was going on. Listen to Brianna Scurry's book. She talks a lot about that team. And like, I found myself walking down the street crying, remembering. I mean, I'm a crier, but like, truly, it was just so exciting. And I, again, not to come back to my nieces, the Bubs, but like I think they think it's very normal. And I think of my 16-year-old self recognizing that in fact it was not. And it just both make me happy. One last thing, you've heard this before, but I'm telling you anyway. I think I was like 3 seconds away from convincing my father after Brandi Chastain ripped off her jersey when she scored against China in penalty kicks to drive us around town. Me and my two siblings and my dad, with an American flag waving out the window, honking. And sometimes I regret not pushing a little harder because that would have been a fun memory. So now to my question, Martha, if you could pick any player from that 1999 squad to play with the current team, who would it be? And which current player would you love to see them, you know, playing with on the field?
I thought about this, and my first immediate thought was we need a strong midfield.
Yeah.
And I thought Michelle Akers,
Also a go.
because I think She just had vision to distribute well. And sometimes I feel we need that a little bit. So I think she would have distributed well to Rose, to the front three. Honestly, that's who I would have picked, but not necessarily that it's because I think she'll be, with a certain player, but I think she would have been great distributing to all our forwards and pushing them up.
Yeah, I think that's right. And yours is actually, my answer is very similar, but a different person. But it's funny that I didn't even think of Michelle. I think of Michelle as like a scorer, which she is, don't get me wrong. But like you're absolutely right that she was so good at distributing the ball. And I think you did call it out Rose, which is funny because mine is also. So I was going to say Christine Lilly, because I think that I was reminded of Lilly yesterday when Trinity Rodman was on that back goal line right in front of Alyssa, kicking a ball out, like a German ball out of the area. And I'm like, Trinity, what are you doing? The other goal's the other way. Like, not in a bad way. I'm obsessed with her. Pink, pink, pink. But she reminded me of Christine Lilly in that final game in at the Rose Bowl when it was overtime and China had a beautiful shot. And I can't remember. Scurry must have just saved the ball and then China like rebounded and Lilly headed it out of the goal in an iconic fashion. And I don't think she gets enough credit. I mean, I obviously among the 99ers, they are obsessed with her, but like when you hear about the 99ers, you hear about Mia, deservedly. You hear about Brandy, just all of them are deservedly. Julie will talk about herself nonstop. And I just think Christine Lilly was so gritty, like would just grit through an entire game, play every position, any position you needed. And I kind of think she'd be ideal for this Emma Hayes squad where like people are being asked to play positions constantly that they are not necessarily whatever for. So I would love to see Christine Lilly and Rose Lavelle in the middle, just because I think they're very like wiry in the same way. And it would be very fun and very, I imagine, intimidating for opponents to see the two of them running down at them. The final games in group play are this Wednesday at 5, 7, and 9 p.m. France time. Remember, 8 of those 12 will go on. So it's not just the top two, it's also those third place teams fighting for survival. It's quite literally anyone's game.
And if you have questions about women's soccer or football in general, you can email us at kicksandgiggles2024@gmail.com. That's kicks, the letter N as in 99er, giggles, 2024@gmail.com.
Martha, please tell your husband that I go into this game. Nope, that's a lie. I'm still stressed. I was going to say that I feel good, but I don't. I feel stressed.
I would say that in general, for me, I'm always going to be stressed. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Right? They could have been playing the last ranked team and I would still be stressed.
Yeah. Sorry,
I mean,
Thailand, but we could
I
be
guess
playing
my stress would
Thailand.
be very, yeah, it would be very little, but still.
Yeah, it's true. All right. Well, we'll see you guys after that last set of games.
Yes, we'll see you then. Bye.
Bye.